Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
To another edition of Memory Lane, and really pleased to be joined today by one of the great hockey players of all time, Brian Trottier. Not one, not two, not four, not five, six Stanley Cups. Brian, how are you today, sir? Thank you for joining me.
I'm great, Corey. Thanks for the invite here. It's always fun to talk a little hockey in the middle of summer.
What does it mean to you to have won six Stanley Cups? We'll talk about a lot of your favorite memories in your career, but when I say six Stanley Cups, man, that's just a mind-boggling number, Brian.
Well, reflection's always fun. Reminiscing is even more enjoyable. I think the wonderful thing about championships is that it reflects well on the group. It reflects well on every guy on the team, because you need everybody. It's such a team sport, and there's an appreciation factor. And obviously, you know, we love talking about those things, the experiences and the stories behind it. So, yeah, the championships are just awesome. You know, you play 18 years, coach for another 10, and people say, oh, my God, you won seven Stanley Cups. I said, I know, but look how many I lost. I lost 21 times. But it's just really fun to reminisce and talk about the good old days.
In 2017, you were named one of the greatest NHL players, one of the 100 greatest NHL players in history. What did that distinction mean to you?
Well, again, I think it looks good on mom and dad and the family, and you know, the teams you played on, and coaches you've had, and it's just players you played with. You know, the Hall of Famers, obviously, but even the young guys I played with when I was growing up, you know, my best friends growing up, and they're still friends today. And they all kind of gave you the stepping stone and the support and the help you need to get where you go. And then all of a sudden, you get these wonderful awards and achievements like the top 100. And it's a special group, you know, and to be considered, I think, is such an honor. And, you know, we want to kind of hold ourselves to a certain standard when it comes to that. But no, it's a wonderful tribute to someone's career, but it reflects well on all the people that kind of helped you along the way.
Just a wonderful, brilliant career with the New York Islanders, debuting there in the 75-76 season. Four straight Stanley Cup titles, just incredible. But we're going to go kind of backwards from your career and start from the Penguins' perspective, because in these parts, that's what you'll always be known and remembered for, the first two Penguins Stanley Cup championship teams. And you joined the Penguins after a great and brilliant career with the Islanders. You come on board in 1991. What can you describe your path to Pittsburgh after the tremendous career with the Islanders?
Oh, sure. Well, it's very easy to talk about Pittsburgh. It's been home here now since 1990, with the kids all graduated here out of Pittsburgh. So it's been a great place to raise a family, you know, just the wonderful atmosphere around Pittsburgh. And I think the identity that I have with Pittsburgh, like you mentioned, it's been another level of appreciation for me. Like you said, I played 15 years in New York, won four championships, and felt very appreciated. But towards the end of your career, when they feel like you don't have anything left in the tank, and all of a sudden along comes a city like Pittsburgh and embraces you, and they appreciate every tiny little thing that I did on the ice. And it just made it all special all over again. I felt young. I felt enthused. I felt good energy, you know, come to a team and the locker room's awesome. And got Lemieux and Yager, and, you know, the guys from Hartford come in, the Francis Samuelson and Jennings. And it's just a whole bunch of things that happened. And, you know, my career was over in New York. I come here, I'm rejuvenated again. In 1990, we went back-to-back Stanley Cups. And, you know, the fun for me was the fact that they were the first Stanley Cups for the city. And I came with a purpose. I had a one-year contract and, you know, just kind of felt vindicated in a sense that, okay, I got nothing to tank here. I win a championship. And I came and Craig Packer calls me up and he goes, "Now, why do you want to sign with Pittsburgh?" I said, "Because I want to win a Stanley Cup with Mario Lemieux." He goes, "Okay, I'll have a contract to you in 15 minutes." And it was just kind of those kinds of things that made it a lot of fun because everyone was excited. And Bob Johnson called me up and, you know, some walking into the locker room for the first time, "Brian's here." You know, I'm like, "Holy cow, I didn't get that reception in New York for a long time." But it was really kind of like a lot of fun. You know, we'd sit around, you know, in the playoffs and Paul Coffey, you know, won some cups in Edmonton, and I'd sit there, and the guys were just big ears. They'd be asking us, "Okay, what do we do this round? What do we expect this guy? What do we expect this game? What is?" And we were just kind of keeping everything in perspective and just saying, you know, this is really kind of fun. You got to ramp it up. You've got to find another level here because we don't have to find our highest level yet, but we just got to play a level above the opposition every game. And every series gets a little more intense. So it was that kind of fun that really made it special coming to New York and the fans. I mean, just the fans, they just got behind us so much. And you look at from 1990 through today, they've had, you know, Mario, Yager, and now Sidney Crosby and crew. And it's just been a wonderful 30, 40 years for the city of Pittsburgh. And, you know, I feel like I was just kind of a small part of that whole little history and success of the early 90s.
What was it like for you at that stage of your career, Brian? Because you were a sensational, huge part of the four straight Stanley Cup championship teams for the Islanders. You're later in your career. You're still a very good player, but you're asked to play a little bit of a different role. Obviously, Mario's there. He's the star of the franchise. What was that whole shift in mindset like for you when you come to the Penguins?
Well, it didn't change much, but it was really kind of interesting how things evolve. And like through the last several years with the Islanders, you know, it was less of an offensive role. It became more of like, okay, you're going to be a senior member. You got to take the kids under your wing and kind of help them along and get them playing really well. You might not see as much power play. You might not see as much offensive role. And obviously, you know, Mike Bossy was gone and we didn't have the dynamic names of the 80s. And, you know, we're still putting up decent numbers. Like I had Mikko Mäkelä on my line and people, you know, have a tough time remembering Randy Wood and the players I played with, you know, after Mike Bossy and Clark Gillies were gone. And, you know, so the numbers went down a little bit. I think that reflects on all of us a little bit. But when your power play time goes down, you know, obviously the numbers go down with that. And so I wasn't stressed about it. It was all of a sudden like, okay, I'll help these kids along. Boom, we'll make some fun happen. But when all of a sudden that's wiped out, you feel like the rug gets pulled out from underneath your feet and you don't feel appreciated. And, okay, that's not good enough anymore. You can't even do it. I was like, okay, whatever. But I come here to Pittsburgh. I was doing the same thing. Basically, I was doing the, you know, little leadership role and working with young, great players like Mario and Yager and, you know, the young players they had here, some veteran guys they had here, Bob Erie and Phil Bork and Troy Loney. And I think it was just a whole bunch of things that just kind of happened that just kind of felt comfortable. Bob Johnson put me in a role where, you know, we put you in offense, you know, we know what you can do. Okay, we take those big face-offs and what you can do. You take those penalty kill moments and up against the other team's best centermen and, you know, just shut them down. I wasn't thinking about that. I was just playing my game. And I think those things just happen because the fun thing about hockey is if you overthink things, you know, you're doing the wrong things. You just got to go out there and, you know, trust your instincts and play your heart out. And a lot of times good things will happen. And that's all I did. I just felt like I came to Pittsburgh. I played my game. Bob Johnson and Craig Patrick, you know, they were fantastic. And the players here in Pittsburgh, you know, the locker room, they made me feel appreciated. And you get on the ice and the fans are cheering for you. You're like, it just kind of rejuvenated my career all over again.
Did you feel deep down, Brian, honestly, that the Penguins had a legitimate shot in 1991? I talked with Troy Loney just a few weeks ago, and they were okay in 89-90, 32-40, and 8. And I said, hey, did you guys feel like you were going to win a cup in 99? He goes, no. I mean, we thought we might have a good team. when you signed with the Penguins and you're telling Craig, hey, I want to win a cup. Did it seem realistic when the process started?
Well, yeah, it does, Cork. I did my homework. I sat in my basement in New York, and I went through the teams. I looked at Pittsburgh and said, Mario Lemieux, Paul Coffey, Tommy Barrasso. They have, you know, great goaltender, you know, one of the best defensemen in the NHL history, and Mario Lemieux, and they're not winning. They didn't make the playoffs. It doesn't make sense. And then you look at some of the other young Kevin Stevens, Mark Recchi, John Cullen. I was just trying to think of some of the Bobby Erie, Phil Bourque. I played against a lot of these guys. I'm like, why can't they make the playoffs? And then just talking to Craig, it was like, you know, their leadership, maybe young leaders, they need to learn how to win, you know. And then Craig brought in Brian Trotsche, Joe Mullen, and, you know, a veteran squad that had maybe won a little bit with Paul Coffey. And all of a sudden, you know, this kind of things just kind of took off. And for me, I felt like they're on the cusp of something great. And when I got here, all of a sudden, I'm like, wow, this team is a lot better. Unfortunately, Mario had surgery, which really was a big twist in the whole thing. And during the season, we were holding on by our fingernails. You know, they made a late season trade with Minnesota to get Larry Murphy, and they do Ron Francis and those trades, and all those things, you know, kind of gelled the team. The chemistry hit, and we got on a roll late in the season, and Mario came back at the right time, and, you know, just things took off. But I felt early, like when I was doing my homework, I was looking at other teams, and Gretzky in LA and young Steve Yzerman in Detroit, and, you know, I thought I could be a Toronto Maple Leaf, and I was doing my homework there with the young team they had up there, and I'm like, oh, maybe bring a veteran guy in and, you know, do something fun. But I really felt really great about what our chances were with the kind of talent we had. And it worked out, and it worked out back to back, believe it or not. It was really kind of cool to have that, to do your homework and it all comes true. And, you know, I always chuckle when I tell a story about I wanted to come to Pittsburgh to win the championship with Mario Lemieux. I won two. And yeah. So it makes me feel good about telling that story, because that was the purpose of coming here.
Now, I heard the story, so I'll ask you if you could share this again about the bonus that you asked Craig Patrick for with regards to Mario's Stanley Cup bonus. Can you share that story, Brian?
Yeah, well, that was part of the little mini negotiation that went on with Craig, because when he did send the contract, it was kind of fun because, you know, I'm going through the bonuses at the end, and the bonuses are all good, plus minus, you know, if we win with so many victories or such and such, you know, it's like 10,000, 5,000. And, you know, every round I was getting a little bit of a bonus, you know, $5,000, $10,000. And I said, oh, they were all good, Craig. But, you know, I really want the big bonus. You know, I'm coming there to win a Stanley Cup, and I'd really want a big bonus for doing that. And Craig goes, well, you got a bonus for the Stanley Cup. I said, yeah, it's a good bonus. You know, 20, 25 grand is not bad. But I said, I want a big bonus. You know, I'm coming there with a purpose. You know, it's good salary. Everything's good. But I said, you know, really, let's really ding this up. You know, we go all the way. You know, I don't need anything for the first, second, third, fourth round, the first three rounds. But I said, that fourth round's a big one. You know, it's a really kind of exciting one. And he goes, what are you looking for? I said, I don't know. What's Mario getting? He goes, I can't do that. I said, well, how about half? And you know how you forget about things at the end of the year. You know, you're going through the playoffs, and June comes and the bonus check comes in. I was like, woohoo! Thank you, Mario, because it was one of those moments where you kind of like said, all right, look how much the big boy made. But it was really kind of an exciting little bonus to get out of the blue.
All right, so you were a great player in your own right. You won six cups. You played against Mario as an opponent. You played against Gretzky. You played against all these great guys. What was it like to play with Mario? You saw him for several years, then you join him. What do you remember about being a teammate of his?
Well, it's really kind of fun because you get an insight to a great player that, you know, you only see him on the ice. You're playing against him. You're taking faceoffs against him. You know, you're trying to defend. And I mean, he was a purist. I mean, he was the best of the best when it comes to stick handling and, you know, one-on-one hockey. He's really tough to defend. But as a rookie, I can remember, you know, playing a game here in Pittsburgh in the old Civic Arena. And it was really kind of cool because he come around the net and said, oh, here, this is my first shift against this young kid. And I kind of gave him the outside. I said, don't try to cut back on the inside, kid. you know, go to the outside and I'll kind of flush you and squeeze you off on the boards. And he gave me the outside inside, tried to jump back in. I just kind of stepped in front of him, and he was so tall, his hip hit me in the shoulder. He tried to kind of jump over me, and I kind of had to lift myself a little bit. I just caught his thigh a little bit, and he kind of twisted and turned. And as he kind of went down on the ice, he looked back at me and said, "What the hell was that all about?" And I almost wanted to pick him up and apologize, because he's not that kind of a player, you know, where you got to bump and grind. And, you know, he wanted to skate. He wanted to stick handle. He was a purist and so smooth and graceful. And, you know, he reminded me of Jean Beliveau of 60s. And I said to myself, wow, here's this great player, and played against him for quite a while. Let's see, like 7-8 years. And then all of a sudden I'm a teammate. And when you see him in the locker room, how quiet he is and how gracious he is, he's a part of the, you know, the teasing and razzing of a locker room, and big smile. And, you know, he stands up and everybody listens, and, you know, he leads by example and he's a quiet leader. But boy, I'll tell you, he's got a big man presence. And, you know, when he goes on the ice and he does something, it's inspiring. And I can remember Jarmer was tired on one of his shifts, and we were going on a power play, and Jarmer was beat red and just out of gas. And Mario looked over, "Jarmer, let's go." And Jarmer didn't say anything. He just jumped over the boards and like, "Okay." Mario said, "Let's go. I'm going to find the energy." And it's that kind of stuff that just made me kind of chuckle, because when you're playing, you know, you're also watching, and you're remembering a lot of these fun moments that happened in the game and that make the game enjoyable and also like inspiring, and they're just great experiences to share.
I'm really curious, Brian, your perspective on this. I've heard huge hockey, lifetime hockey fans talk about this with regards to Gretzky and the way the game was played in the 80s and the free-flowing style. I'd like to get your perspective on hockey in the 80s, and obviously Gretzky had just an unbelievable career with all the points, you know, goals and assists, and the way the game was played. He was allowed to move around the ice versus the way kind of hockey became later on. And you know the history. You've been there in Pittsburgh. People will compare Gretzky and Lemieux. What was hockey like in the 80s with that style? And is there merit to the fact that the game changed and the way the game changed? And what would Gretzky have looked like 15 years later? That kind of thing.
Well, there's a lot more clutch and grab, obviously. There's a lot of more battle zones. There was, you know, you had guys water skiing, you'd wrap guys up with their stick and just kind of glide beside them and back check and just kind of tie them up all the way back. And it was really close checking hockey. It was physical. There's a lot of head hunting and a lot of battles, like a lot of battles, very physical game. And, you know, Mario came into the league, obviously, in 84. It was that brand of hockey that was around. And, you know, he's not that kind of a player. Gretzky's not that kind of a player. But when you surround yourself with great players, and obviously when Mario got some better players on, you just saw the numbers that he put up as well. And taking nothing away from Wayne and the style he played, God, you know, he had tremendous talent playing with him in Edmonton, too, with Jari Kurri and Mark Messier and Glenn Anderson and Paul Coffey before he came a Penguin. And when you surround yourself with great players on the ice, 3, 4, 5 guys at one time, I mean, you put up some incredible numbers, and that puck moves around faster than people can check you. And, you know, they're still trying to grab and clutch and slow you down. And, you know, Mario's got a statue out in front of the Penguins where, you know, he just busted through two Islanders. It was Rich Pilon and I'm trying to remember the other one, but they was really kind of comical to see, like they had sticks on them and everything. And he just kept plowing away and then, you know, tucked the puck in. And it's just a tremendous, you know, reflection on a guy who's as powerful as Mario, as graceful as he is, and he's unstoppable. And those kinds of players come along, you know, every once in a while. And, you know, Pittsburgh had the opportunity to see somebody as great a player as Mario, you know, who fought through the early 80s stuff and then saw the game start to blend where, you know, a little more wide open hockey now. There's a lot less clutching and grabbing. And, you know, it's speed. It's all about grace. It's all about skill. You see just a different brand of hockey today, but it's very, very entertaining. And obviously, you know, it's great for the game because it opens it up. There's a lot more shots at the net, a lot more, you know, just a less battle zones, unfortunately, but also just a different kind of game, but it's special. These players are great athletes today, and it's wonderful to see the speed they have. And I always ask them, my generation, how do you think we do in today's game? They go, no problem. And it's just a confidence thing, like Gilbert Perreault and, you know, Guy Lafleur, Mike Bossy before they passed away. And it was just really kind of fun to see that confidence that our generation had to say, oh, yeah, we'd find a way to, you know, excel at this game too. But, you know, I think everybody kind of adapts to the style of game that's going on at the time, and the very best of the best still excel.
Favorite memory? You won six cups. You experienced the highs of the highs. When somebody says to you, what will you recall the most from your career? Is there one, or is it a collection of three or four? Or how do you go about looking back on your favorite memory?
Well, that's probably the number one question I get asked, Corey, and it's a great question because, like, the first of anything, you know, the first time you put the jersey on with your name and number on is pretty, it's so exciting, you get goosebumps, and then you score your first goal, or, you know, you do the first of everything, you know, the first game you play, all those firsts are just highlights in your mind. And mine was it went back to the time I was 8 years old and I watched John Béliveau get handed the Stanley Cup, and I turned to my dad and I said, Dad, I want to win a Stanley Cup like John Béliveau. And, you know, he goes, well, you better start practicing. And, you know, I was just learning how to skate and play hockey and all that stuff. So he taught me how to shoot and how to skate, and did most of my practicing on the river right next to the house. And it's really kind of great to be able to, like, fast forward and watch Bobby Nystrom score the overtime goal against Philadelphia that made me a champion for the first time. It's still my greatest moment in the game because it made me a Stanley Cup champion for the first time. And you think, man, I would have had one shift in one NHL game wearing an NHL jersey. I would have been the happiest guy I went to my grave because that was our dream as a little kid. But mine was to win a Stanley Cup. And I said, if I'm going to the NHL, I want to win a championship. And I went with that purpose, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm a champion. Bobby Nystrom made me a champion, and in overtime, and that's a snap of your fingers, you're a champion. You know, prior to that, it's a tie game, anybody's game, who's going to win. All of a sudden, in overtime, it's like sock hockey when you're like a little kid playing floor hockey, and all of you, okay, seventh game, Stanley Cup champion, overtime, boom, yeah! And that's what happened. It was that moment, and then the exhilaration, and to look in everybody's faces and remember those moments, And to this day, I still tease Bobby, say, but you're still, you know, that's still my favorite goal ever. I had nothing to do with the game, with the goal. I was on the ice. I wasn't on the ice. I was on the bench resting fast for my next shift. And, you know, I watched that puck go in, and I watched you and John Tinelli practice driving the net 1,000 times after practice, you know, one guy passed to the other. And it was part of our drills during practice was drive the net, deflection, top self. And that goal made me a champion. So that's my greatest moment, and I love sharing that story with everybody.
And last thing, you won six as a player. You won another one as an assistant coach. Did you ever get one or multiple times to have the cup for a day or two? And what did you do with it if you did?
Well, that's another fun trivia that a lot of people don't know. The day with the cup didn't happen until like the mid-90s.
And oh, is that so right? Oh, my goodness.
So when we won the cup with New York in the 80s, and we won the cup here in the early 90s with the Penguins, yes, I took my time with the cup, but we had to sneak it. The keeper of the cup was always like looking for that Stanley Cup, and we just kind of tossed it back and forth to each other. Wouldn't tell on anybody. Wouldn't say where it was. I think Phil has it. Oh, I think I saw last time I saw it was when, you know, Bobby O'Eary had it. I'm not sure where it's at now. And so everybody would kind of take it for a few hours or half a day, and it'd always show back up for the parades and the celebrations. And my first time, I said to myself, you know, we're at a dinner. We'd won the cup in New York with the first Stanley Cup. And I went up to Bill Torrey, our general manager. I said, Bill, where's the cup going tonight after the dinner? He goes, well, it's just going back to my house. And, you know, we got the parade tomorrow at 10:30. I said, could I take it home with me tonight? And I'll bring it to the parade in the morning. He goes, sure. So I snuck it out, and the keeper of the cup's following. Where are you going with that? I said, I'll be right back. I threw it in the back seat of my car, took off. But I ended up putting it at the foot of my bed. because I wanted to wake up in the morning. I had the drapes open because that sun was going to shine in. That morning sun was going to shine in, you know, early morning. I wanted to wake up, and the first thing I saw when I opened my eyes was going to be the Stanley Cup. And that sun hit that Stanley Cup. I popped my eyes open, and it looked magnificently perfect. I was like, oh, my God, this is awesome. I couldn't have drawn a better picture. But, you know, yeah, we've all had our time with the Cup on special times. You know, you hear all various stories about, you know, somebody ate cereal out of it or whatever. And I always say to myself, you know, like, I never did anything crazy like that. I was just always wanting to, like, shine it up and make it a little more perfect and that kind of stuff. But it was really fun to share with family and friends and community and neighborhoods and have it for a few hours. And in Colorado, when I went in 2001, I had it for a whole day. So I went up into the mountains, took some pictures up in the Continental Divide and one of the lakes that we go up there near Breckenridge. And then we came back down, had a steak dinner with Stanley. And so he was kind of like the focus in the restaurant, believe it or not. And we had a wonderful day with the kids and the neighborhood and taking family photos. And he is like the perfect celebrity all by himself. And I always chuckle when I go into classrooms and there's, you know, Hall of Famers like, you know, Lanny McDonald or myself or somebody else. And you got Stanley Cup rings and you got, you know, the mascots and you got the Stanley Cup. But Stanley Cup is the biggest celebrity in the room. Like he is like magnificent. It's a perfect trophy, I call it.
I'll tell you what, though. Of all the stories I've heard and read, and those were great ones, taken back to the family. You want to talk about kind of a tearful movie kind of moment of waking up with the Stanley Cup and the sunshine. That's as good of a story as I've heard. Seriously, because everybody wants to share with all kinds of people, but just the romantic kind of nature of the way you told. I could see that in a movie. That's how the movie would open, with, you know, the scene with the sun coming up through the room and shining on the cup or something. That's a glorious story. I really appreciate you sharing that.
I set that trophy up at the end of the bed on that little table, open the drapes. You know, I'm like, I'm saying, what if the sun does? I don't care. I said, the sun's going to shine sooner or later. I'm going to open my eyes and that thing's just going to be gleaming. And it was. I mean, you couldn't, like you said, you couldn't ask for a better, like, Hollywood story in that regard, because everything was just like perfect. It hit perfect. Oh my eyes, that thing was just glaring at me. I'm like, this is like spectacular, you know. And it was like, you know, the heavens all opened up and went, ah! It was like the angels sang in that moment. Absolutely.
What a great story. And I cannot thank you enough, Brian, for sharing these great memories. Just tremendous, tremendous stuff. And wonderful career. All the Stanley Cups, just fantastic. And we cannot thank you enough for taking the time to be with us.
Absolute pleasure. Look forward to being up in Altoona here tomorrow. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Thanks, guys.